Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. Over the next 15 minutes or so, our goal is to describe the ups and downs, the ins and outs, and the whys and why nots of the most important story of our century. It's good to have you with us. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of February 7th, 2016, and we're happy to be joined by our frequent guest, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing great. How are you doing?
That's great. That's great. So, DR, there's, as you know, the MCAN conference, the Massachusetts Climate Action Network conference, is coming up in mid-March. And we got a chance to catch up with the executive director of MCAN, Ms. Carol Oldham, to tell us some big news about the keynote speaker that will be attending the conference. So let's, as they used to say, let's roll the tape. So we're joined by Carol Oldham, who is the executive director of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. How are you doing, Carol?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's great to have you here. So, Carol, we know that there is a conference, that the MCAN conference is coming up on March 13th at Northeastern University, and all kinds of people are welcome to come. Tell me, what kinds of things might they learn when they get there?
Well, you can learn all kinds of things. So it's for everybody from sort of experienced environmental activists to people who are brand new to the issue or people who just, you know, with this weird weather we've been having, feel like they really need to do something about climate change. Mm-hmm. And I'm really excited to announce that we have our keynote speaker lined up, and she's going to be incredible. Her name is Jane Klebe. Probably most folks have heard of her. She runs Bold Nebraska, and she is a pipeline fighter. She is the one who is essentially responsible for stopping the Keystone XL pipeline.
Right. She was in the heart of the whole thing for the Keystone
XL,
right?
Absolutely. Yes. She's an amazing organizer. She is really dedicated to raising up local voices to stop dirty energy, and she did an amazing job mm-hmm. on the Keystone XL mm-hmm. pipeline of bringing all kinds of voices to the table and making sure that everybody was heard, and you know, ranchers and farmers and the local Native American tribes, and she's an amazing organizer, and she's really excited to come and talk to people at the conference.
And there are analogies, right? Keystone XL was a huge pipeline that's going to be driven through states, and of course here in Massachusetts, we've got our own, shall we say, a rash of pipelines that want to cross our states, right?
Absolutely. I think that there's a lot that she's really excited to talk to the folks here who've been fighting the pipelines. And I'm sure that everybody who's been fighting the pipelines is going to be really excited to hear what she's got to say. It's definitely, there are a lot of parallels. And again, just that she's really dedicated to that local action, making a difference on the national and international and state level. And so I think she's just going to be a great speaker.
Great.
She's
That's
very
great.
Inspirational.
That's super. So let's remind everybody, when they get the chance to see Jane Klebe, it will be at Northeastern University on March 13th, the day of daylight savings time changeover, right?
And,
so tell me, Carol, where can people go to sign up to find out, you know, what special deals are available? There's some, if people sign up before the 15th, that's a good thing for them, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So they can go to either our website, massclimateaction.org, and go into our events page and find the conference there, or they can go to localenvironmentalaction.org, which is the registration page. And one of the things that local organizations can do, like our chapters, they can co-sponsor the conference. And so that's the early bird special, is that it's $60. You get two tickets and you get your name and your organization's name in the program. So it's a really great deal.
Based
encourage
just
them.
if I quickly do the arithmetic, that's $30 which is pretty good price,
it's
right?
It's a you pretty get good price. Yeah, I mean that's the thing is that it includes breakfast, lunch, and a reception at the end of the day, and then obviously all of the workshops, and you get to see Jane Klebe in person in the ballroom at Northeastern's Curry Center.
And just one of the things I always like is breakfast, lunch, and dinner is. Breakfast, lunch, and reception is there. You get to meet other climate activists. You get to recharge. You know, it's a wonderful thing so people don't feel isolated. They know that they're part of a movement, right?
Absolutely. I think it's really important in the work that we do to connect with each other because it can be really depressing to feel like you're doing it all by yourself and, you know. And
this is a chance, right?
Stories. Yeah, yeah, this is the chance. And it's going to be a really fun conference. It's going to be a really great opportunity to learn and to connect with folks. And we're actually going to do an MCAN lunch hour get together so that folks can, you know, all the MCAN folks who are members, who are chapters from around the state, board members, you know, everybody can get a chance to connect with each other and just kind of meet and greet during lunch. So I'm excited about that too.
Super. Well, Carol, thank you very much. March 13th, Sunday, March 13th, go to the MCAN event page to sign up. And thank you very much for taking the time to chat, Carol.
Thanks so much.
So there you go. I think that's great. Jan Klebe is a rock star, right? She led. It's just wonderful. It will be
that's
very
be
exciting.
Big news, and definitely people should have their cameras rolling because I know she's going to say something great.
That's great. So speaking of saying great things, DR, right here in the sovereign state of Massachusetts, you and I have talked over the past few weeks a lot about the governor and what sort of energy policy he wants to pursue. We beat up on him a little bit over hydropower, his preference for hydropower in the recent state of the state, and we beat up on him for not even talking about the natural gas pipelines he wants, those nasty natural gas pipelines he wants. But there was a report this week that goes in his credit, and we certainly want to note it and thank the governor and appreciate it, ask for more. But
yes.
Yeah, tell me, what did the governor do this past week that would make a climate hawk smile?
It was a great report in the Lowell Sun about Baker unveiling a $15 million plan to basically underwrite solar and thermal heating. The Lowell Sun reported that Baker has released a $15 million initiative aimed at creating hundreds of solar panel and thermal heating systems over the next several years to supply energy to low to moderate income households. Baker is quoted as saying that, quote, people struggling to get by, people struggling to pay their bills, and people struggling to pay their rent ought to be able to participate more fully in the Commonwealth's clean energy economy. And the Lowell Sun notes that $10 million of the financing is coming from the Department of Energy Resources and $5 million is coming from the Massachusetts Clean Energy Center. So it is a very bold move. I don't know if it necessarily offsets some of the controversy surrounding Baker's energy efforts, but it is something that definitely should be applauded.
Well, right. I think it is good. And I think it highlights one of the issues is how, you know, we always call for renewable energy, but if you're a renter or you don't have a lot of income, it's hard to get in the game, right?
Exactly.
So good on the governor for, I mean, $15 million, let's face it, is a drop in the bucket, right? You could use a lot, but it's a place to start. And
exactly.
It is aimed at the right a set of people, right? I mean, that need to be included in our discussions and our work. So we will congratulate the governor, and as I said before, please do that 10 times more.
Exactly. Let the sun shine in.
So there's that, and then we're forced by reality to go back to some of the questions about pipelines, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's all kinds of news about pipelines this week. I want to dive into this stuff, we talked about the senator, we talked about the mayor, we talked about Acushnet. I just want to put in one brief word in creative vocabulary word, right, of this concept of blockadia. Mm-hmm. It's kind of it's a state of mind about opposing these new fossil fuel infrastructure projects. And as I say, it's kind of like living in Red Sox Nation, right? It's mm-hmm. a way of thinking about the world. It's what you see out there that's important. And there, I think more and more people are, in a sense, moving psychologically to the country of Blockadia. So mm-hmm. having said that, tell me, what did the mayor of Boston do recently, and what context was that in?
The mayor of Boston, Marty Walsh, announced that he is going to appeal a decision by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission that allowed the building of the Spectra Energy of the West Roxbury lateral pipeline going through a residential neighborhood in West Roxbury. The mm-hmm. FERC basically said that there's no reason to stop this project, and obviously Mayor Walsh and other residents of West Roxbury are saying no, there is a very good reason.
There's about 30,000-40,000 of them there living
exactly,
there, right?
Exactly, to put a stop to this. So he is going to file a legal challenge to this decision, and it will be very interesting to see if that legal challenge is successful, because again, you know, when you look at the layout, the physical layout of where this pipeline is being built, it's being built in close to a quarry in West Roxbury that uses dynamite. So the combination of dynamite and natural gas is going to be pretty explosive.
Wrong?
Exactly.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, it's true. West Roxbury is a suburb of Boston. It's fairly densely settled. It has a fair amount of political power, mm-hmm. and it does not like being told by the federal government that, you know, they should be quiet and accept this pipeline. They are there's Mayor Walsh in Blockadia. You mentioned something called the Federal Energy FERC, Regulatory Commission, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that is some kind of a, in my understanding, that was formed in the 1970s, about the time of the oil crisis, to make sure that, you know, all the good stuff happened in the country and we get all the oil resources that we needed, right?
Mm-hmm.
But tell me, what did Senator Warren have to say about FERC?
Yes, Senator Warren has stepped up her criticism of the FERC as an entity that basically is not doing its job in terms of serving the public, but seems to be more interested in serving special interests, namely the interests of the fossil fuel industry, and specifically the natural gas industry. It was reported in the Springfield Recorder that in a speech in Springfield last week, she said that, you know, there are some regulatory agencies such as the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau that do a good job of protecting the public. And then there are some agencies that don't do such a good job of protecting the public. And she noted that, quote, this is about whether the federal government listens to people on the ground and protects their interests rather than the interests of the richest and most powerful. And no place is that distinction clearer than it is with the Northeast Energy Direct pipeline. So it's very interesting to see Warren sort of push back against the FERC, and it's sort of, you know, basically tipping its thumb on the scale in favor of the
industry.
Exactly.
Now, just so everyone knows, the Northeast Direct is the pipeline that goes across the northern part of the state, and mm-hmm. based on citizen opposition in Massachusetts, has at least parts of it have moved into nearby New Hampshire, where it's meeting similar opposition. But
yes,
that's running across the top of the state. Mm-hmm. And then there's another pipeline proposed across the bottom of the Algonquin pipeline that it runs across the southern part of Massachusetts, which is also facing opposition. Mm-hmm. In fact, in my own hometown here, there's supposed to be a pipeline going through, and I know many stalwart citizens who are trying to stop that.
Exactly.
And then, as I say, they're in Blockadia, and there's another story that's just come up, and it is in a town down in southeastern Massachusetts, right? Mm-hmm. DR, can you tell me what's going on in the town called Acushnet?
Yes, there was a great report by WBUR, the NPR affiliate about pushback towards a $3 billion natural gas pipeline expansion project called Access Northeast. And the citizens of Acushnet are basically making the point that this pipeline is not needed. And if the energy companies, including Eversource and National Grid, if they want this, if they want all this natural gas, there's more natural gas that can be acquired through sealing some of the leaks in the current pipelines. And this is really, and this is just a cash grab. And that the natural gas is not for residents of Massachusetts. It's basically it will be exported. Right. So there's a huge. Pushback and a lot of citizen activism based from residents of Acushnet saying that they do not want this in any capacity whatsoever, and they're not buying the promotion of this pipeline and its alleged benefits coming from the representatives of Eversource and National Grid.
Well, what I mean, so I have a special fondness in my heart for Acushnet because my sister-in-law grew up there. I've been to the place for various sort of family functions very frequently. My father used to give me $5 and tell me to drive out to the orchard, the apple orchard in Acushnet, and get, you know, a bag of apples for the family every Sunday morning when I was in high school. It's a beautiful town. And as I say, I'm very fond of it. But the way I read the article, one of the things in the article, in addition to the pipeline, they are bringing the natural gas into holding tanks in Acushnet that are enormous holding tanks where they're going to liquefy the natural gas and hold it there for spikes in demand and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And with the whole issue in the Porter Ranch issue, where a huge reservoir storage facility is leaking for months and months and they can't do anything about it, and here they're going to build additional, I guess there are two tanks in Acushnet now in an existing facility, and they want to put in two more tanks, but they don't tell you that the two additional tanks are each 13 times the size of the original tanks that are there now. So this is a big expansion of a liquefied natural gas. I mean, once you liquefy any gas, you're really concentrating it, right? So to have these huge tanks of this incredibly explosive stuff in liquid form, I can see where the people of Acushnet are wary. And as you say, what I got a kick out of is that they have all, from the report, in this NPR report, they've already absorbed and are quite cognizant of the motivations of the companies and what the risks are, right? Exactly. These people are savvy, so good for them.
And the NPR story, the WBUR story, also notes that the new tanks would be twice as big as the LNG tanks in Everett. Now, if you think about all the controversies over the past several years about LNG tanks and the fact that they make, frankly, a juicy terrorism target, you have to wonder what the logic is here these companies trying to build these new tanks.
I think it's called economies of scale, right? The bigger is cheaper for the company.
But you have to think, are they not running the risk of legal liability if they build these things knowing that they could be a potential terrorism target and then, God forbid, somebody actually does something?
Well, I think that, I mean, I heard a speaker the other night say that, you know, these companies, you know, if the stuff blows up or there's a leak, they say, oh, I'm sorry. You know, we didn't think about that. And they keep
moving.
My bad. Yeah, it's not my bad, right? And they move on. They don't care. For them, it's just, you know, it's a small check they pay out and they keep marching. So, All right, DR, we have to leave our caterwauling and complaining there. Right? Mm-hmm. Tell our listeners that they can catch up with the links and most of what we talked about at the blog is massclimateaction.net/blog. You can also go to massclimateaction.org/blog. Either one works. When you get to that page, take a look at the sign-up page for the conference in mid-March. It's March 13th. You can go to the MCAN page and go to the events, and you can sign up there. Or you can go to the other link. I think Carol mentioned it. It's localenvironmentalaction.org and sign up that way. You can find our podcast on the MCAN Facebook page. It's /massclimateaction. So listen to us, share us so that other people can learn about these issues. You can listen to our show directly on your smartphone using Stitcher or TuneIn Radio. You can find us, of course, on iTunes, which is now a virtual institution in cyberspace.
Exactly.
So, DR, we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and because we believe it is our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States put a price on carbon. So thank you very much for being here, DR.
Thanks.
And thanks to everyone for listening. We'll see you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.